Welcome back to another edition of the Business Edge podcast. And this is a podcast where we look at the issues that are affecting the economy and business in Prince Edward Island, one area that's of personal interest that doesn't seem to get a lot of conversation because it's too controversial is immigration. The effects of immigration, the impacts of immigration, whether it's necessary to the economy, which we'll review. Many people have already formed opinions on the subject of immigration, but like it or not, it's an essential component of our province and has been for 300 years. So let's dive into it and let's get kicked off with another edition of the Business Edge. So here we are again with immigration in Prince Edward Island. Is it a growth strategy or is it a growth constraint? And immigration has historically always been like a bit of a pendulum. So it swings too far one way, and with indifference, it swings too far back the other way. Think of it as the pendulum of a clock, just oscillating back and forth without much regard for the constraint until it hits a really hard stop, and then it starts to oscillate back again. That's sort of how immigration has been treated for hundreds of years, probably. And let's not forget that everybody probably listening to this podcast today is has been brought here through immigration, maybe not in the last couple of years, although some people perhaps have, but over hundreds of years, we've had many communities settle into Prince Edward Island and make it their home. And we've also had many people exit Prince Edward Island to settle at different parts of Canada, the New England states, and as far away as California, if not farther across the globe. So there's a shallow way to talk about immigration in Prince Edward Island, and then there's a serious way. The shallow way is to say that PEI has to slow things down because housing is tight, healthcare is strained, and infrastructure is under pressure. The serious way says that PEI is living inside two truths at once. The province can't absorb unmanaged population growth without consequence, but it also can't protect its future by quietly starving its labor force, its tax base, its entrepreneurial pipeline. And that's the real policy tension. Immigration is not a side issue for PEI. It is now one of the central levers of the island economy. The question is, does PEI have the policy capacity and understanding to manage the complexity of this undeniable and necessary force? Let's look at sort of the history and the context of how we got here. PEI's history makes that clear. In 1861, the province had a population of about 80,857. It rose to 109,078 in 1891. And then it fell back again to 88,038 people by 1931. So we start a little bit of a growth for a small number. It completely receded. Part of that is, you know, because of the impact of several global wars and out-migration. But this has been a long arc that's shaped the out-migration and the limited economic scale of PEI. Even by 2011, PEI's population was only 145,855. That matters because it reminds us that for much of its history, PEI's central demographic problem was not runaway growth. It was stagnation, leakage, and the steady loss of people to larger labor markets. Our population hasn't really grown by magnitude or in consideration of what the national population growth rate has been. We have been fairly stagnant up until recently. That older problem never really fully disappeared. It just changed form. The island's own economic and population strategies have repeatedly acknowledged that PEI needs to grow its working age population, improve immigration retention, and match newcomers to labor shortages and business formation. The province's 2017 Population Action Plan explicitly argued the sustainability growth that requires recruiting and retaining immigrants to strengthening settlement supports across the province and aligning the nominee streams with the changing needs of the PEI economy. Its economic framework said the same thing more bluntly. International immigration is a more important factor in both population growth and labor market development. That logic has only become more important. PEI's natural increase has turned negative. From July 2024 to June 2025, the province recorded 1,375 births. That's 1,375. Not a huge number. That's how many births occurred across our province. But conversely, the number of deaths that occurred in PEI, 1,620, for a natural decline of 245 people. And that's pretty consistent. We generally have a lower birth rate than we have a death rate. More people are leaving PEI than entering PEI in our traditional population. Over the last decade, the senior population has also risen sharply. In 2015 to 2025, the number of seniors increased by 42.2%. In plain language, PEI is aging. Births are not replacing deaths. And without inward migration, the province would face a weaker labor force, slower household formation, and more fiscal pressures on healthcare and social services. We really need an active, youthful, productive economic engine contributing to society to sustain those that are aging and require the supports that are afforded them. And this is just not a PEI issue. Statistics Canada's latest population projections show that Canada's population is expected to age further, while recent federal immigration and non-permanent residency policy changes are expected to lower growth sharply in the near term. In fact, I think I just read a recent report that said this year, for the first time ever, Canada's population is declining. And that is a very significant policy concern. It's one that senior policymakers like the federal government, I'm confident that Mark Carney would see this. If we don't have a vibrant, youthful population, as we described, the country will stagnate. And I'm sure that economists are looking at that and trying to decide, okay, if there were errors with immigration policies in the past, how do we correct that to ensure that we have the right people coming to our country and maintaining a growth trajectory? And this is part of the problem that China's having. They had a one-child policy for many years, and they're now dealing with the consequences of that because their population has aged and is shrinking. And now they're trying to encourage people to have more children in China. But in many cases, like in Canada, it's expensive to have children, and it's not always feasible or affordable. So for a small province like PEI, that national slowdown matters because federal decisions now shape the provincial room to recruit workers, attract families, and plan infrastructure with confidence, not even considering the impacts of transfer payments. And as our population, you know, the transfer payments, to the extent that they will continue to be available as we expected them to be, are all based on population. If the population recedes, the equitable transfer of federal funds will also decrease as a percentage of population. Not good for Canada, worse for PEI. So the recent PEI growth story has been unusually strong. The island's population reached 179,709,000 on July 1st, 2024, and 182,657 on July 1st, 2025. PEI's five-year growth rate from 2020 to 2025 was 14.7%. It's one of the fastest in the country. The province also recorded 2,843 immigrants from July 2024 to June 2025, much more than our birth rate. While the net interprovincial migration added another 1,000 people, PEI's own economic update tied continued population growth directly to the broader economic growth. And as recently as 2024, the provinces projected that the island could reach 200,000 people by 2030. That caused a lot of people to get upset. Several years ago, provincial government suggested that 200,000 number, which was very achievable and realistic, considering we're at 182,000 today. The thing that got people worked up was the demands on constrained infrastructure. And that includes schooling, healthcare, which we're certainly seeing today, highway congestion, which nobody seems to like. So all the positive benefits of a growing economy, increasing tax base, are frustrated by people's fear that the roads are more crowded or that they're having challenge to access healthcare, which is legitimate. Really, what we should be looking at is how do we get to 400,000 people and what's the pathway to get there? What's the timeline that we need to look at? Because if you look at where we've come in, you know, 100 years, 150 years, we've only added 100,000 people or less. So that's a pretty slow progress in what would be considered a desirable economy. Canada is now for the first time shrinking in population. We can't allow that to happen in PEI, and we need to be more aggressive. And how we get people to come to PEI, who we get to PEI, and how we recruit them. Let's dig into that. But the growth exposed a weakness in the provincial model. PEI was better at attracting people than synchronizing the housing services public infrastructure quickly enough. The province's housing strategy progress report now says updated projections place a 200,000 milestone closer to 2035, not 2030. So it's acknowledging a cumulative housing shortfall by years in which population growth exceeds the number of new units construction. And that's a critical admission. It means that the problem was never simply immigration volumes. It was a mismatch between demographic policy and a build-out capacity. So when you think about that pendulum, it swung through public policy, and I would argue an oversupply today of housing. So that oversupply, if there's an oversupply in general economic terms, it'll mean people won't achieve the rental targets that they're expecting to get. And as a consequence, those rental rates will recede. And that's a good thing if you're trying to get affordable housing. It's a bad thing if you've built your model based on expected return in rents to cover the cost of construction. Because with the oversupply, we're going to have people who've made or constructed buildings going to be underwater, and potentially people will lose or not be able to maintain those investment strategies. So are current PEI immigration policies effective? That's a good question, one that I tend to put a fair bit of consideration to. And the honest answer is partially, but increasingly narrow and potentially self-limiting. So on one hand, the government's current immigration posture is rational in a narrowing operational sense. PEI is prioritizing workers in high-demand sectors such as healthcare, trades, childcare, and other shortage areas. Under the Atlantic Immigration Program since January 21, 2025, new endorsement applications have been limited to healthcare, construction, and manufacturing. That triage approach reflects real bottlenecks and real infrastructure constraints. If a province cannot house people, staff schools, and expand primary care fast enough, it is understandable that it would concentrate scarce immigration capacity where labor shortages are most acute. But the province needs to do more to monitor bad actors, which it probably understands but lacks intent to deal with. And I think that's a big consideration in the immigration strategy and maybe absent in the immigration governance. There's lots of targeted immigration, but not much oversight in how that's being administered. And I would certainly consider that a criticism toward the administration today. So then let's look at the other hand of that triage model. It's not the same as a growth model. Narrowing immigration too aggressively can protect today's pressure points while quietly weakening tomorrow's economy. Economies not only grow through nurses and carpenters and factory workers. Important as those roles are, they also grow through retail managers and logistic coordinators and hospitality operators and digital workers, early stage entrepreneurs, franchise buyers, skilled workers. These are the people who start a sector and move up, and families whose long run contribution is broader than the job code they enter with. If PEI treats immigration mainly as a short run vacancy filling tool, it risks underbilling the very population scale that supports our tax revenue, consumer demand, regional revitalization, school enrollment, and business succession. That concern is consistent with PEI's own earlier policy thinking, which emphasized retention, regional settlement, entrepreneurship, investment, and broad-based population renewal, rather than narrow occupation filters. That's why the current policy framework feels more defensive than strategic. It's not rational. It's not irrational, but it's incomplete. It addresses immediate strain better than long-term population economics. But the risk is that PEI is trying not to overheat, and it drifts into underscaling. A small province with an aging population, negative natural increases, that's the births over the deaths, and continuing labor shortages can't afford to only think in 12-month administrative cycles. They need a broader perspective and a longer-term vision. And that's what immigration should be. That's why the 400,000 person population target needs to be an aspiration. We don't need to achieve it today. Maybe it takes 200 years to achieve it. But if we've got the right target, we can build the infrastructure expectations to map best to that growth trajectory. And there's people out there that would love to come and contribute to the island economy, to the island communities, to the island population and the tax base. But it needs to be done in a measured way. And what we've observed, or what I've observed over the last couple of decades, is a very haphazard, assertive pendulum swinging too far one way, back and then too far the other way. And there really isn't a coherent opportunity for the environment or the economy to embrace and adapt to that kind of swift, unregulated swinging. So is PEI's government policy appropriate, or is it choking the economy? And that's a good question. I think there's different perspectives. But at the moment, it is more accurate to say that the province is applying a constrained policy response to an unconstrained structural problem. The policy is understandable, but too blunt to maximize economic potential. PEI is not wrong to slow the intake where housing and services are lagging. But it'd be wrong, however, to confuse a slowdown with a strategy. If immigration restrictions become the default substitute for faster housing delivery, faster land servicing, more aggressive infrastructure financing, and better newcomer retention, then yes, the policy will begin to choke growth. It will not happen dramatically at first, but it will show up in lost employers, delayed expansions, weaker business succession, smaller school cohorts in rural communities, and a thinner tax base trying to finance an older population. And I would strongly suggest that that's exactly what we're seeing today. This policy is myopic, and we're creating a new challenge through inaction. In correct action and in appropriate action, and we need more proactive action. We need a better target, and the economy needs to know where the government policy is heading. So what should PEI do instead? Well, there's a few things. First, the province needs a population-led economic plan, not just an immigration screening system. Immigration targets should be linked explicitly to housing completions, rental vacancies, school capacity, primary care attachments, transit and road servicing, and municipal infrastructure readiness. In other words, PEI should publish an annual absorptive capacity framework. How many people can the province responsibly add, and in what regions, under what infrastructure assumptions, and with what capital programs attached? That would replace reactive policies with measurable planning. The province already has a foundation for this approach and its population framework and housing strategy. It just needs to operationalize the linkages, which don't exist today. Secondly, PEI should separate short-term labor triage from long-term population building. Key priority streams for healthcare, trades, childcare, construction, but reserve a defined share of nominations for broader economic categories, business succession, rural employees, international trained professionals with transferable skills, younger family forming households that like to stay, investment. You know, a healthy immigration system for PEI cannot be only reactive. It needs a portfolio design. Third, retention has to become the centerpiece, not the afterthought. The economics of immigration improve dramatically when newcomers stay, advance, buy homes, start firms, and raise families. PEI's own action plan recognizes this years ago. It means better credential recognition, faster spousal employment pathways, stronger regional settlement supports, language and integration services, employer accountability, and a deliberate strategy to move newcomers from temporary work to permanent roots. Every immigrant who arrives and leaves within 2 or 3 years is not a sign of just the personal mobility, but it's an acknowledgement of policy leakage. And the investment that's gone in to integrate and settle and coordinate these people, to see them, you know, migrate to someplace else where their skills will be employed, is a loss for PEI. Fourth, housing policy must be treated as economic policy. PEI's housing progress report is effective, saying that years of fast population growth outpaced unit delivery. That's clear because it wasn't planned well. The answer is not to pit housing against immigration. It's not to align them. The province should accelerate permitting, land servicing, modular and prefabricated builds, worker housing near major employment clusters, and municipal infrastructure, cost sharing. You know, if PEI wants population growth without political backlash, it has to make visible progress on supply. And we can't have government criticizing immigration or immigrants, which we have seen, unfortunately, in recent years. Immigration is what we're built on. Immigration is what we will be built on in the future. And we need to find supports and mechanisms to ensure that the people who come here thrive. Fifth, PEI should build a regional population strategy, not just a Charlottetown area growth strategy. And I'm sure larger communities like Summerside would chime the same thing. Smaller communities need schools, primary care, broadband, childcare, and employment anchors. If newcomers are going to settle beyond the capital region, which is where people tend to want to gravitate to, doesn't matter if it's Charlottetown provincially, Halifax regionally, or Toronto nationally, everybody wants to get to the major urban center. Earlier provincial planning explicitly called for settlement supports across all regions. That remains correct. Population growth is concentrated too narrowly, and it can intensify urban pressures while leaving rural demographics to decline and remain unresolved. Sixth, PEI should negotiate more aggressively with Ottawa for allocations tied to demonstrable capacity and sector needs. Federal limits are now a core variable in provincial growth. If PEI can show where workers are needed, where housing is coming online, and how retention is being managed, it is a stronger case for tailored immigration space. The alternative is to let national policy averages dictate local economic ceilings. And the province, as with every province, does have some subjectivity over the federally regulated immigration program. That's through their provincial nominee programs. But even those are so constricted, there's not a lot of latitude. And that's become much more constrained in recent years. The province needs to demand more control on the type of people that they can bring to the province that support the economy and the community. And I think that's one that is really quite important. We need capital in many forms. We need human capital in population growth, intellectual capital for knowledge and dispersion, and we need investment capital. And that's often overlooked because it's been given a stigma, but without external capital flowing into this province, we just recirculate government money, and that's not a vibrant, growing economy. We need capital to come from outside and to multiply within our island shores. And then, as I mentioned before, we've got to clamp down on nefarious activities that besmirch the process and credibility of immigration. So the bottom line is this. Immigration is not the thing choking PEI's economy. Poorly synchronized planning is. The island needs immigration because its demographics demand it. Its labor market needs it. And its long-term fiscal health depends on it. But PEI also needs the courage to admit that growth without housing, servicing, and retention discipline creates avoidable strain. The winning model is neither open-ended expansion nor defensive restriction. It is coordinated growth, measured intake, hard infrastructure investment, regional settlement, strong retention, and a clear population ambition tied directly to economic development. For Prince Edward Island, this is the real choice. Manage growth properly, and immigration becomes the engine of the next generation of prosperity. Manage it poorly or suppress it out of caution, and the province risks returning to the older island problems of too few people, too much aging, too much economic potential left on the table. So immigration is it stirs a lot of feelings in people, some negative, some positive, some frustrated. But I've got 20 years looking at migration, and I've worked as a professional immigration consultant. I'm certified by the Canadian government. I've done master's research on attraction and retention of newcomers. And it's time for the province to break out of the shell that it finds itself in, which is mostly governed by fear and constraint, and acting without a plan. It needs to build that plan. It needs to be courageous in its ambition, and it needs to work to support the economy, the communities, and the growth of the province. Without that, if we continue on the path that we've been on for the last arguably 5 years or so under a very frightened government who doesn't have the strength or the conviction to make bold decisions, then we're going to be left in a compressed economy, shrinking population, and there's not much hope except to, you know, maybe hope that a link to one of our other neighboring provinces provides us supports that saves the community. And that is not a proactive way that anybody should be making plans. That's it for the Business Edge this week. Again, it's Blake Doyle, happy to provide some controversial suggestions that affect the island communities, economies, and the business sector here on Prince Edward Island. Be sure to tune into our other programs, including The Exchange, where we interview interesting islanders who've got compelling things to say and interesting backgrounds. We've also got the Red Dirt Review, which is a bit of a deep dive into these Business Edge podcasts. And it's a kind of an interesting conversational digestion of what we've discussed here today. And the most interesting part that's just being launched is our call-in program. And I encourage you to dial in. It's available daily. We'll probably take a break in late spring for the summertime. But you can reach us either on Facebook Live, we'll be broadcasting, it'll be on YouTube, and you can either leave messages through Facebook if you've got questions, or you can call in. We can encourage you to do that. We want to hear through Islanders. All of these different media platforms are all part of the Island Do, and we look forward to your feedback, and thank you for tuning in and listening again today. Have a great day.